This is Bulls Beat on Bulls Unlimited. Bulls Beat is your stop for exclusive interviews, highlights, and the very latest on all sports at the University of South Florida. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
Hello and welcome to the Monday March Madness version of Bulls Beat. Unfortunately, the men's basketball team not playing in the NCAA tournament. We'll have some highlights of their win on Friday and their defeat to UAB on Saturday. We'll give you those later on in this segment. And where they're headed next could make you forget about that pretty quick, because it'll be a Warren I-4 in the NIT. As that was announced on Sunday night, the Bulls going up against UCF in Orlando. Why are they not at home? Well, we will explain. Don't worry about that. My idea to fix the NCAA tournament. This is the year where, kind of like what happened with college football this year, everybody realized that expansion was needed. I know some people, well, a lot, don't think expansion is needed for the men's basketball field. That's because those people mostly just care about their brackets and not the teams in it. But we saw so many really, really good teams get left out. And I have a perfect idea that would be the right way to do it. But we're not going to turn this show into a soapbox simply because there were way too many things of a positive nature, and I don't want to get too angry on Bulls Beat. But trust me, if you want to hear my idea for fixing everything, namely expanding the tournament, and before you cover your ears and go, la, 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 no expansion, first of all, I think Bulls fans would be listening, and this is an idea I've had for years, well before the Bulls are one of the latest examples to miss out on the field. And we'll do that on the podcast page here. We'll post it tomorrow at some point so I can really fully lay it out. I actually want to spend some time with my family on Monday. We were busy with baseball this weekend and battling a cold, but great accomplishments. Primarily women's golf winning a major event in Arizona this weekend. We also have a lot of victories for track and field as it was hosting an event. We'll also in our second block give you some baseball and softball. Both teams went 1-2 this weekend. It was pretty darn eventful at Red McEwen Field where I was on the microphone. You can tell still a little bit nasally off and on with my voice this weekend with the cold, but sorry, we're still doing the show. Not going to not do it because there was so much going on. Wanted to highlight women's golf though, because we mentioned on Friday's show how they, in their last event, frankly didn't perform very well. They were 13th in a field of 17, which included the number one team in the country, a bunch of top 25s. How would they do to bounce back at the Mountain View Collegiate, an event that featured Arkansas, a top 10 team, only one other in the top 25, but plenty in the top 50. Bulls came in ranked 42, and all but two were in the top 85. So the Bulls, if they could pull it off, would be in pretty good shape, and they were in great shape after the first day. Six under par round of 282, led by a 5-under from Melanie Green. Alize Vidal had an eagle on her 16th hole. She shot a 2-under 70, even par from Leo Medeiros, and the score was rounded out by Emma Falcher. More on sort of how the scores were rounded out as we go along here, because that was a big deal. Day two, the field started to push back, particularly Iowa State, which shot an 11-under par round, while the Bulls for the middle round were 1-over. And so heading into Sunday, they were tied with Texas A&M, that's the other top 20 team besides Arkansas, at 17th, and Houston and Iowa State were just a shot back. And midway through the third round on Sunday, it became a three-horse race. It was the Bulls, Houston, and Texas A&M, all separated by one shot, and everybody else was either right at par in the case of Arkansas or over par. So it was going to be one of those three teams, and the Bulls, I mean, pulled it out in the end. Melanie Green was outstanding, but so was Alyssa Montgomery, the Virginia Tech transfer, who in her first round, her score didn't count. It was a 3-over par. Shot the same number in the second round, which did count because Vidal had a 6-over. That second round, again, the Bulls as a team were over par. But yeah, very much under par on Sunday. Try 11-under with Melanie Green winning the individual championship, and it was not even close. After that first round, 67, even par for her second round, 6-under in the third. She wins it by three shots over Arkansas's Maria Jose Marin. Four birdies on the front nine, four more in the back nine, even though she bogeyed the last hole, it did not matter. But Montgomery, a 4-under 68, was absolutely enormous for the Bulls because that just carried them. The other two scores were one under solid by Leo Medeiros and an even par by Vidal. When you win an event, especially a strong event like this, by four shots, and you only have one golfer in the top 15, two in the top 20, and outside of Melanie Green, everybody else was kind of like right there in the pack, it means that people were picking each other up, and it was a true team effort in a victory for women's golf. I'm sure we'll be talking to Erica Brennan, who called it a banner day for the program, third win of the season for the Bulls, the most since the Big East champion team in 2011-2012. If you go to the USF Women's Golf page on X, you can see the celebration at the end. Looked like a blustery, windy, overcast day out in the desert, but did not impact the Bulls' putting, which was phenomenal. Keep an eye on the rankings when they come out. The Bulls no doubt will leap up from number 42. And again, worth noting, the reason they're playing in Arizona is that is where the NCAA championships are held each year. And of course, the Bulls are trying to be part of that. Again, we got men's basketball highlights coming up in our second segment here shortly, along with the recap of the weekend in baseball and softball. Another big-time W over the weekend turned in by women's tennis. Wanted to mention, and you can get all of the results on GoUSFBulls.com, five victories and four program records for track and field at the USF Alumni Invitational, and they almost swept all of the four relay events, both the men's and the women's, 4x1 and 4x4. Three first-place results for the men in the 4x1, 39.13 seconds, was the fastest in school history. Zaquan Lincoln, Jaleel Kroll, Nathan Metellison, Abdul Rashid Saminu. The women won with the second best time in school history. Zariah Ahlers-Laberd, Taryn Peterson, Janiyah Burton, and Shania Benjamin. The men also set the school record in the 4x4. 3 minutes, 5.8 seconds. Metellus, Markel Jones, Dante O'Banion, and Trishawn Bowie. And then the women almost made it a sweep. Second place. Triple jump victory for Goodness Aradia on the men's side. And the other victory was early on Friday with the pole vault record going down courtesy of Kobe Babin. So a lot of great stuff and more podium finishes, meaning top three for the Bulls. Again, you can get not just their results, but all of the results at GoUSFBulls.com as the outdoor track and field season is just underway. Heads up for Wednesday's Bulls beat. We'll let you know how men's golf does in really almost an identical situation of the women, namely another tough field. Women's tournament had 13 of the 15 squads in the top 85 for the men, 13 of the top 15 in the top 80. This is out in Palma Valley, California, and the men, like the women did last weekend, enter this one ranked 42nd. The highest rated squad is number 3 Vanderbilt. We also have 10th ranked Oklahoma, number 18 Cal. Host Fresno's in the top 50 along with LMU, BYU, Oak State, UCLA, and conference foe SMU. By the way, the only team from the American that was in the women's event, which the women won, was Tulsa, which finished next to last. Now, men's basketball. We knew that the men would be playing somewhere, and you preferred it to be the NIT, and it was. Yeah, watched the NIT selection show for the first time in a while, and it was, well, it was different. We warned you about it, that the NIT, which in the past is doing what the new event on the women's side actually is doing, which is accepting all the regular season champions who did not make it to the NCAA and then filling out the field. Well, because of this new power-hungry, I don't know what you want to call it approach, the NCAA decided to award, guaranteed, no matter what your record is or your ranking is, two spots to each of the Power Six conferences. Of course, the Big East has earned its right to be included in that. And I think this approach is going to last for all of 1 year, but as we found out when the draw was announced, it wasn't just guaranteeing those conferences two spots. And frankly, in a 32-team field in the NIT, you're probably going to get about two teams per conference if you look at the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Big East, and Pac-12. That's fair. But what's not fair, in my opinion, is these teams are all guaranteed to be hosting, leaving just four hosting slots for other leagues to vie for. Indiana State absolutely deserved one of them. No complaints there. Then Bradley, which was third behind Indiana State and Drake in the Missouri Valley Conference and ranked 57th in the net. Can't complain about that either. And definitely not complaining about Princeton, because that's a perfect example of a team that should be in the NCAA tournament. My brief idea on expansion after we give you some Bulls in the AAC highlights. But I will complain about one host. Again, 12 were guaranteed to the power conferences, but they ended up getting 13 of them. And I don't have any issue with three of them coming from the Big East because they only got three in the NCAA, and those teams barely missed the field, even with St. John's declining a bid. So Seton Hall, Providence, and Villanova all get to host, but so did Butler. Guess where the Final Four of this event is? Hinkle Fieldhouse. That's why Butler is hosting. And that would have been a situation where the Bulls certainly could have found their way in. Oh, by the way, another Big East team got in. That is below 500 in Xavier. So there's a chance for sure that the Bulls could have been a fourth non-power host. And instead, they're not. They're going to Orlando, which in the end, the Bulls win. It's going to work out. We'll tell you more about that in a second. If you want a full highlight reel of the win from Friday for men's basketball, getting a 30-point lead and performances from all over the place, including a career high in assists from Brandon Stroud with 8. Kobe Knox, 5 of 6 on 3s, 17 points. Self Miguel, 17. Kaysen Pryor, a 10-10 game. Just scroll down here on the podcast page where you can also hear what Amir Abdur-Rahim had to say post-game of UAB. And here, what happened on Saturday. And after falling behind 8-0, the Bulls got into it with the Blazers.
USF really working hard for everything they're trying to get done right now.
Well, it just can't get the ball in the paint because Lindeborg is patrolling down there at 6'9". Here's Placer at the top, 8 on the shot clock. Chris Youngblood, he's got Lindeborg on him. Stops, dumps one inside to Pryor, ball fake. Now he shuffles it over to Hines, 2 on the shot clock. Layup is good in the final second of the shot clock. Boy, the Bulls worked their tail off to finally get one. Bulls getting after him defensively a little bit. Left side, Buddy Johnson launches a high arcing three that misses, and Jose Placer gets the rebound. Throws it ahead to Kobe Knox. He's got a head of steam. He's going to the basket. Now he kicks in the corner. Youngblood wide open for three. Let's fly. Got it! And just that fast, the Bulls rip off 5 in a row. Youngblood in the near corner. Jab step to create some room. Fires a 3 and rattled it in, and he's tied the ball game at 8.
He didn't have much room at all to work in that corner.
Lindeborg out of the game, and Javion Davis at 6'9", 265 comes in. Here's a pass to Hines. Kicks in the corner. Selt Miguel doesn't pull the trigger on a 3. Cross-court pass to Youngblood. He puts it on the floor. Picks up his dribble, looking for help. One-handed pass. They swing it around left wing to Selton. He's going to load up a long three. That's good. Oh, nothing but twine, and the Bulls have ripped off 11 straight.
How about that? Bulls fall behind 8-0. They go on an 11-0 run by themselves with three-pointers being a key part of it. And the Bulls have tremendous energy and pride going right now.
They've done it in less than 2 minutes. Vasquez goes around a man. His shot was altered, and he somehow got it to go. From about 16 feet away, great defense by the Bulls, and UAB beat the clock.
Yep, great body control there by Vasquez to hang in the air and somehow get that shot away.
In the corner, it goes to Youngblood, wide open for three. Got another one! Chris Youngblood is white hot!
Wow, Chris Youngblood is taking care of business by himself early in this game. 3 made three-pointers.
Shot clock cut in half. Kobe Knox on the left wing, trying to get it to Miguel. Instead, he goes in the corner to Pryor. He's going to work on Vasquez. Got a size advantage there. They swing in the corner. Reed is open for three. Lets it fly. Got it! From the same spot, Chris Youngblood has been making them.
Big, big play for Jaden Reed to knock down a three. His offense has been a little bit more sporadic in the last few weeks, but Jaden Reed is capable.
Kobe Knox at the free throw line. He picks up his dribble. Now he gets it to Jaden Reed. Man down. Reed is loose. Left side pass to Selt Miguel. 9 on the shot clock. Crossover. Step back. Long three. Got another one. Oh, and he put Vasquez on roller skates.
How about these three-point shooting Bulls? 6 of 13 now from range. That's 46%. And that has helped the Bulls build a 22-14 lead.
However, boy, from up 8 to down 8 at the half, as indeed UAB ends it with 8 in a row, and they would get the lead up to 14 before the Bulls had one last run and really looked like they were going to pull off another major comeback.
Man-to-man defense out of the Bulls. 16 and a half to go. 11-point lead for the Blazers. Quick trigger three on the left wing, and that one is good. That's Vasquez, and they are making everything. It's 52-38.
Yep, it's a 14-point lead, and here we go. This is the hopes of the season on the line right here, Jim. We'll see what the Bulls have to do. They got to do whatever they do. They got to do it quick.
They get it ahead to Brandon Stroud. His layup is good, and he got fouled, and he challenged Vasquez and Lindeborg. We'll see if the foul is on the big fella. If it is, and it is, that's his third. And I guess that's what you do. You got to challenge him, and Lindeborg is going, look at the replay. Why? You fouled the guy.
Yep.
Live with it. And Bulls trying to deny the inbounds and get it into Vasquez. He crosses over. Now his pass goes through the hands and stolen by the Bulls. Kobe Knox got hit in the open court, and that's a foul on UAB. And look at that pressure by Amir coming out of the timeout, how much that sped UAB up.
Yep. Amir has made a habit this year of changing up defenses coming out of timeouts, confusing the opponents. And once again, UAB having a little trouble.
So Selton appears to be all right. Here's Placer with a bounce pass, right wing to Stroud. High post it goes. Youngblood turns and fires from 15. Missed it. Pryor, offensive rebound. Kick out. Selton's wide open. Didn't pull the trigger. Now he will. Left side three. That's good. He knows what he's doing. Shut up, Jim. Big well, bucket right there for Miguel.
To single digits. Back to eight.
Pryor picks up his dribble. Right wing it goes to Placer. Here's Pryor. He's going to go to the basket. Reverse layup. He spins it in. Lindenberg has three fouls. He couldn't do anything about it. 13-10 left to play. 56-48. UAB on top. Vasquez, he's going to load up a three over Pryor. Off the front rim. Missed it. Lindenberg come over the back, and it ends up in the hands of Selton Miguel. He throws a one-handed pass to Pryor. He's got the smaller man on him, and he goes around him.
Nice.
He spun that one in two. The same way, an instant replay by KP.
Suddenly a six-point game, 56-50. UAB, the Bulls are on the run. Timeout, UAB.
What a push by the green and gold. They've hit three in a row. Reed being guarded by Ortiz. Stroud sets a screen. Reed gets it to Pryor. He's going to stop and pop. Three-point attempt. Good! Cason Pryor gives the kiss and the three fingers as well. And he's having himself a day. Now 14.
Now it's five.
There's a lob inside. Coleman got a shot blocked by Brandon Stroud. He had an easy reverse layup, and Stroud, with his length, sent that out. Coleman grabs it. Double team comes. He gives it up. Vasquez goes right at Selton Miguel. Now he picks up the ball,
that's
a shot clock violation. Pryor's got a smaller man on him. He's going to go all the way to the basket, though. Selton Miguel missed the running layup. He got hit in the head. No call. And Selton went through a lot of contact there. Here's Gaines back the other way. He's going to throw a lob, and they missed the dunk, and Pryor gets the rebound. They tried to get the alley-oop to Christian Coleman. Here's an outlet to Youngblood. He's ahead of the defense. He throws down a one-handed tomahawk. Oh, my heavens. He brought it all, and he brought the smoke.
Three-point game. UAB 59, USF 56, and Chris Youngblood goes flying in with authority on the tomahawk dunk.
You know, the fouls were the kryptonite for the Bulls in Birmingham. And now in this stretch, three quick fouls against USF. Now five in the second half.
That's about 8 seconds, Jim, and Stroud picks up two fouls.
Two-point game. The Bulls have mounted a comeback with a 7-0 run. Here's Gaines on the handle. Selton Miguel guarding. Goes around two guys. Taken away by Youngblood. He throws the outlet pass to Selton Miguel. He's going to go to the basket. Layup is good. And the Bulls have tied it at 59.
How about those Bulls down 14 in the second half? They've forged a tie, 8:50 to go in the game, 59-59 with UAB.
The Bulls turn in the Blazers over now. They've got a double team. They get it to Lindenberg. He runs into Youngblood and throws it up and in, and that's a foul on Youngblood. Now, he's in a no-win situation there, Joey, because if he tries to draw the charge, he didn't give Lindenberg enough room to come down, and Lindenberg just threw it up to the basket and went in. Well, that's a tough break for Youngblood.
Oh, if Jim only knew the bad breaks that were still to come for Chris Youngblood. A technical foul, ruled to have flung an elbow a little bit too flagrantly, and from the time that the Bulls tied it at 59, UAB would run off the next 11 points, and the Bulls only got off one shot in that time span. How? Technical free throws, regular free throws, bunch of free throws, and the one that they missed, they got the offensive rebound, kick out, Selton Miguel fouls a three-point shooter. And, of course, they make all three of those, add in a steal, and just like that, the Bulls are right back in a hole after all the effort that was expended. And the UAB is just too good of a team to have to keep coming back against. By the way, UAB rolled Temple. I don't know about you, but when Temple stunned FAU, I thought, well, shouldn't this put FAU on the bubble or in Dayton? Nope. They were an 8-9 game. As we get into how I would fix the problem this year, I think, prove to Bulls fans that the folks that say the NCAA tournament is perfect how it is. Why mess with perfection? Yeah, BS. People that say they're against expanding the field say, well, it would make the regular season meaningless. Tell me exactly what meaning the regular season championship of the American Athletic Conference had for the Bulls, outside of the good vibes and everything that happened in campus, but as far as they're making the NCAA tournament, it was meaningless. Period. We already have a meaningless regular season for everybody that's not in a power conference and a few stray other teams. 75% of the teams Doesn't matter what they do during the regular season. They have to win their conference tournament. I have a way to fix it. It would involve expanding to 96 teams, but not just adding 28 teams and hoping the committee does right by everybody. No, you have to rig it so that they have no choice but to do right. And we just saw the NIT get rigged for the power conferences. This would be rigged for the non-power leagues. Now, you're still going to have power conferences get in, but specifically, and we'll do the full thing on our podcast page tomorrow. This is the 60-second version. Add 12 at-larges to get to 80, and the last 16 spots are determined by a two-round play-in tournament where you have eight hosts. It's almost like regionals where you have two teams advancing into the NCAA field from each host site, but you guarantee those eight host sites are teams that finish first, second, or third in their regular season. Also, and this would fix everything, mandate that there are at least 16 different conferences that get in at large. Indiana State's in, the Bulls are in, Princeton's in, and yeah, those 15th or 16th at larges might go to a team that's, you know, ranked in the mid-50s. Who cares? There's still room for more at larges for the power conferences, and you could, if you wanted to, guarantee that every conference, all 32, get a spot in the play-in field, etc. But that's just the brief idea. We'll do more of it on our podcast page tomorrow when my voice is fully returned, and maybe when I've calmed down just a little bit. After initially being announced as a Wednesday night game, which seemed a little strange because Wednesday at 9, this would be probably the quickest game to turn around as far as getting the teams on the court, and you have plenty of teams playing Tuesday. Indeed, the Bulls will play Tuesday in Orlando at 9 o'clock. A couple of other notes in the NIT, North Texas, which, yeah, probably benefited from some teams from the power conferences saying no thanks, but also won the NIT last year, is in the field, going to LSU. Another conference team, SMU, gets in and will play at Indiana State, by the way. Indiana State, if it wins and Butler wins, they play each other in the second round. Loyola, a team that the Bulls took down, is in the field as well. If the Bulls win, they'll get either Villanova or VCU. They would go to Nova or host VCU. I think either is pretty darn cool, a chance to play up there or in the YC. The only other chance for another game at the Yingling Center would be in the third round, but only if Iowa and Utah both are out because they're the host, quote-unquote, power conference teams in that field. Incidentally, Charlotte, which was riding pretty high at many times this season, losing to Temple in the quarterfinals probably did them in for making the NIT, and they are done. They could have gone to the CBI, but you look at that bracket, oh my goodness. 15 teams going to Daytona. It'll be a fun event, but that would not have been a place for the Bulls. The number one seed is High Point. The number 15 seed, the ultimate last team in, is a 9-18 team, actually 12-18, but three of their wins are against non-D1 teams. That would be Chicago State. The only D1 independent, they wrapped up their season more than a month ago because they just played this very strange schedule, and now they're back. And the fourth tournament, the CIT, was supposed to have 16 teams and instead has 9, including 11-22, Alabama A&M. So much better record owned by your Bulls, and they'll take it to Orlando on Tuesday. The guys will be on the air at 8:30 with that. Wanted to mention officially the women's basketball season is over. As you heard right when we signed off, basically, from Fort Worth last week after the Bulls had lost in their quarterfinal game to UTSA. Short answer, but it was right on the money. He said that their ranking was just not going to be good enough. And clearly, what we said, what we thought, this new WBIT event, which after taking the automatic qualifiers, basically all of the regular season champions who did not win in their conference tournaments and obviously did not get an at-large bid either. And the Bulls actually were in good shape, I thought anyway, when it came to that, because especially Saturday, a lot of those teams got pushed to overtime, had to win at the buzzer, that kind of thing. And in the end, there were only 7 of those, so I figured the Bulls were going to have room to get in, even after the power teams were taken. Turns out about half of the 32 teams were power conferences, and what hurt the Bulls is they dug deep when it came to that. This committee went with 14-15 Illinois. Now, Illinois has a much better computer ranking than the Bulls. They also went with 15-15 Virginia. Again, not good record, but much better power ranking than the Bulls. Although, I'm looking at a couple teams that got in, and not nearly as much, of course, attention is going to be paid nationally to this as what was going on in the men's NCAA bracket. Miami was supposed to be in this tournament, and Miami was supposed to play Stony Brook. If you go to Stony Brook's website, the story initially said, and Stony Brook was one of those teams that won the regular season, had a great year, 27-4, they were going to be playing in Coral Gables. Now you look at the WBIT bracket, and the number one seed is James Madison. James Madison is ranked 108 in the net. The Bulls are 109. That clearly was a plug-in that benefited James Madison and probably was a little bit of an embarrassment because the WBIT actually posted that Miami was in the field, and rather than saying, oh, they declined the invitation and changing things more fairly and then picking someone besides James Madison, it was, well, the Dukes that benefited. And I don't know, there, to me it seems like there was room for the Bulls, but instead they went with one thing that we touched on is after the Power Six conferences, the Atlantic 10 had a bunch of teams in the top 100, and basically they all got picked. VCU, George Mason, and St. Joseph's were all in the 60s to 70s range. So again, truly that computer ranking hurt the Bulls. And then some teams like Ball State and Belmont that were second and third in respected mid-majors got the spots over the Bulls. I'm a little surprised that they didn't get in. But then again, the American only got two teams in. Tulsa was the automatic. Co-champion North Texas gets in. Tulsa will get to host Arkansas, by the way. North Texas goes to TCU. So again, looks like the first four out of the NCAA tournament were Miami, Washington State, Villanova, and Penn State, because those are your 4-1 seeds in this WBIT. But then James Madison just magically appeared in that spot of Miami. Truly not a number one seed in the WBIT, but they got it. Could have been the Bulls. Wasn't the Bulls. Could have easily still been playing because the now WNIT, which is the third tier event, had 48 teams, but the Bulls were not going to accept a bid there. It's a pay-to-play event. And actually, some power conferences did accept bids into that event, including 13 and 18 Purdue. These are teams that just generally don't play in the postseason. I think that's part of it, too, as far as why the Bulls said no thanks. Do see FIU, coached by former Bulls assistant Jess Burks-Wiley, will be pulling for them in the WNIT. And two American Conference teams did accept bids, including UTSA and UAB. So it looks like Temple was not too happy either about being snubbed by the NIT because they finished in a three-way tie for first. And they actually were one of just two teams, the other being North Texas, that was in the top 100 from the conference. And yeah, Temple's ranked ahead of James Madison, so that would have been a no-brainer for me. But anyway, we move on. Hey, nothing stressful about what women's tennis did. Actually, that's not true. Their match was stressful, but it was a victory. And Christina Morris' team is doing some things now. We can't wait to see what their new ITA ranking is. But they defeated the 40th ranked team in the country on Senior Day on Saturday, and they are now 10-7 on the season. Probably their biggest win against a team that came to town 11-4. And this time the Bulls win the doubles point. That has not always been a sure thing. Ireland Simi and Marta Falsetto Font 7-5, and an easy win for Kelly Vargas and Melissa Senley 6-2. Then Falsetto Font rolls on the fourth court. Yale picks up an easy win on the fifth court, and after Gargi Padwar won her first set 6-2, she got top 6-love 6-2, so we were all even with three matches still going, and whoever won two of them was going to be a winner. And Nadja Bay Christians, after winning the first set 6-love, dropped the second, went to a tiebreaker. This was enormous, so decisive, and she wins it in a nail-biter 7-5, while Grace Schumacher clinched it after dropping her second set in a tiebreaker, rolling in the third 6-1, and this was while Yale was about to pick up a win on court three. So really, the final score officially was 4-2. It ended up being 4-3, as close as possible, and the Bulls prevail. Men picked up a thrilling victory on Friday in San Diego against Texas Tech, but then they ran into one of the best teams in the country, the host USD, and lost. They were without Alvin Todorica, their top player in that one. He only played doubles on Sunday in a 4-3 loss to 26th-ranked Princeton, where Todorica didn't play, but Davide Tortora, who was the Bulls' number one last year, made his debut and won his match easily. So the Bulls right now are below 500, but the point is, if they're at full strength, they are going to be able to make a run and win the conference tournament, and we'll get more into tennis, obviously, throughout the course of the week. Tomorrow on the podcast page, we'll put a full weekend recap with a lot of highlights of baseball, but that'll wrap up our work for Monday, and we'll be back at it on Tuesday. Posting that, and yes, my full unabridged version of how to expand the NCAA tournament the right way. Thanks for dropping by, listening to Bulls Beat. I'm Derek Sharp.